Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grim's Hentai Corner with Maggot Baits. We're back, and we're doing as much as we can. Don't know when we're gonna get back to Maggot Baits, because we are having a complete change of pace. We have the comics week next week, with a lot of our familiar comics. And then, of course, we're going into our palate cleanser, which will be briefly interrupted by the release of Gore Screaming Show on November 11th. But other than that, we will be going back to classic games for our palate cleanser. Stuff that, you know, I've talked about, so you know what to expect. But we will go as far as we can. And that's probably about an hour. So we'll do an hour more, and wherever we get after that, we'll pick up, I guess, in December. So if you can wait, that's cool. But I prefer not to jump back into this one, at least for, you know, a good month or so. And then we'll jump in and finish it out right and start some new ones. The abnormal young girl known and feared as a witch was currently getting fucked by her natural enemy, a bulbous monster. Tendrils extended from the monster's main body, binding both of her arms and legs to prevent her from moving as its tentacles fucked her. The tendrils bore the shape of human dicks, covered with numerous warty protrusions along the outer surface. They rubbed against Carol's walls as they penetrated both her ass and pussy. The tentacles rubbed against each other through the wall between her pussy and ass, the warty bulbs crushing and scraping against it. Carol's porcelain skin was sweating, and a stifled scream escaped her throat. Of course, you know, we don't really have to go through yet another tentacle scene. I mean, there's probably not much here that we haven't already seen. You know, aphrodisiacs, it's in the brain. You know, it's not like anything hardcore. Yeah, I mean, we've already seen this scene, really. It's just if you wanted to see her get fucked by tentacles, that's pretty much all this one is. Let me make sure I got the volume up loud enough for you guys. Oh, I don't. My bad. I got it up loud enough now. You should be good. Sorry about that. There's probably just going to be a bunch of these little eight scenes. It's not even a good eight scene. Like, it's at the point where we've done seen it. Like, we've already seen this H scene, to be honest. It's a different character, but it's the same kind of scene. Sorry to be the Buzz Killington of the deal, but yeah, it's not so great. Yeah. God, it's just so much text with one scene. Yeah, I get it. It's for, like, cum fetish people. I don't care for that. That doesn't turn me on. It's, After entering the city of Pandemonium, Sunaga was scouting Slumville from several hundred meters away in the direction of the ruined district, barely frequented by people during the day. Allison was nearby, accompanying him. The high-rise den of thieves that his enemy operated out of was clearly seeing abnormal activity. For starters, the outer wall around halfway up had a huge hole gouged out of it. Fires must have been sparking up inside as well, since thin trails of black smoke were rising out into the sky. There's also the front entrance on the ground floor. The barricades stacked high before it had also been demolished. It looked like a tank or a bulldozer had forced its way through. The common thread between both signs was that the fact that it had been assaulted by an outside force with overwhelmingly great destructive power. Inside, gunfire continuously roared on an unprecedented scale. However, the roar of battle on the lower and middle floors had just ceased. That meant the chaos inside was about to be brought to order, even though the after effects of the destruction still remained. I'm sure that was the master. Allison pictured Gloria as she looked up at the smoke billowing far above her. Given the control witches possessed over gravity with their repulsion field, it was likely that one had used their flight to break in from that height. In truth, that hole truly was the work of Gloria. Then, who was behind the bottom? His words weren't directed at Allison, though. They were only a question cast at his own thoughts. He had no way of knowing the truth, but it was possible to gain a clear understanding of what happened. There was an additional third party that attacked the enemy similar to Sunaga. The path of destruction left on the ground must have been caused by a raid from someone he didn't know. In which case... Let's go. There was no reason not to take advantage of the unprecedented situation troubling the enemy he was supposed to face. Sunaga made his decision in an instant and quickly began taking action. Allison followed behind him. His prediction wasn't far off the mark. The remains of the dreadful slaughter were still fresh in the halls and living quarters of each floor as he infiltrated from the first floor. The unique mood that filled the inside of Slumville had completely changed as well. Normally, the residents of each floor would be patrolling, but that tense sense of danger and exclusion had vanished. Countless corpses issued a gruesome silence in exchange. Every floor along his way up to the 12th was in an identical state. Whatever third party had attacked from the ground had walked the same path as Sunaga, heading for the upper floors and fighting against the group of armed humans that had taken root on each level. Sunaga climbed the stairs to the 12th floor and then entered. There was an elevator leading from here to the 40th floor, something he'd memorized from the blueprints brought by Ego. He was checking to see if it was still operational. What is this? Every corpse looked strange in Sunaga's eyes. Not a single one of them looked like they had been killed by blades, guns, or other lethal weapons. Some had literally become stains on the walls as if they were crushed by a compactor. Some were burnt to ashes by extreme heat, but not by the fire spreading around the area. Others lay mutilated like they had been consumed by thousands of insects and rats. What kind of murder squad and weaponry had passed through here? It wasn't hard to imagine what could have caused it, but he could determine it wasn't a witch. Their brutal edges were simple, deadly weapons that worked by severing or thrusting. They shared the same trait of being a supernatural threat, but it was impossible for one to recreate a massacre like that without using other mixed and mysterious methods. That meant it had to be the doing of a regular human, or a group of them. This went beyond any modern weaponry that Sunaga knew of. The thought of facing off against this fearsome third party was something he wanted to avoid at the moment. Hold up, Allison. Sunaga drew Allison back by her hand before she stepped forward. He then opened the door close by and hid. Allison's eyes went wide at that display of calm, quick motion. What's wrong, Oni-chan? Someone's coming. Stay quiet. Footsteps were echoing through the site of the massacre, filled with the silence of death. Regardless of who it might be, it never hurt to avoid a face-to-face encounter. Fight or flight, regardless of which he chose, the advantage would be his. The footsteps drawing near was a single pair. They advanced down the hallway toward the room where Sunaga was hidden with a composed, unhastened gait. He waited for them to continue past the room, but they unexpectedly stopped right before the door. I'll count to three. The woman's voice rang sweetly through the wall. Come out of the room by then. Otherwise... Before her voice could finish her command, Sunaga fired five rapid shots from his Sig Sauer. The bullets punched right through the paneling door. At the same time, flashes of light ran horizontally across the passage wall. The brown-skinned witch, Irene, leapt forward through the wall she dismantled into puzzle pieces in an instant. Allison had been hiding along the wall in a blind spot, and she wasted no time charging in. The preemptive gunfire wasn't meant to be an attack on their enemy, Irene. It was meant to draw her into this trap. The surprise attack completely took Irene's breath away, but she still parried it with her well-honed swordsmanship. Now she knew about their soldier waiting in ambush. It was you? Allison had leapt back and braced herself, but Irene still kept her guard up with her sword while her eyes recognized Sunaga squinting with hostility. I guess you're still using witches as tools in your cowardly plays. I don't like it. Irene drew a step closer to Sunaga. Allison tried to react to her movements, but she couldn't budge under the pressure constantly being directed at her. Though it was technically 2-on-1, Sunaga was a normal human. His body was as fragile as a water balloon filled with blood before the supernatural strength of a disastrous witch. I have to do this. Allison understood that much as well. That was all the more reason she had to take a stand for herself and fight. Her legs were cowering. Her body had understood Irene's strength well enough from their last exchange. There was no doubt Irene was stronger than her. But I have to do this. The cowardice of hers had caused her precious bond with Gloria to slip away from her. She didn't want the same thing to happen anymore. Right now, the enemy had their back to her. So, her thoughts had suddenly interrupted. Irene had changed targets to Allison. She was feigning movement towards Sunaga, the steely blue eyes focusing on her pierced her with tremendous fear. Hey, hold on. Not yet. She still hadn't gone from coward to hero yet. She only had seconds left before her auto-suggestion solidified her resolve. However, reality wasn't going to wait those few seconds for Allison. In that instant, Sunaga's right arm rose. He immediately settled his aim and pulled the trigger on his Sig Sauer. 9mm Parabellum bullets filled out the explosive blast. His target was Irene's face, her left eye. Just as before, it was a distracting shot that presumed she deflected with a repulsion field. It caught her off guard and seized her attention, which was the whole goal. Shutting one's eyes was an instinctive reaction to an object flying into one's vision. It caused her decisive slash aimed at Allison to miss. Why, you cunning jerk! However, the distracting shot that saved Allison also resulted in inflaming Irene's rage. The memory of her humiliating defeat drew out her hatred, so she shifted targets once more. She stepped forward with supersonic speed and slashed simultaneously. Her blade was impossible to perceive with human kinetic vision, and it was slicing through the air at Sunaga. What met the attack midair was Allison's Shotel, leaping in with the same superhuman speed. It was quick enough to slice through her hesitation. Her resolute blow managed to deflect Irene's blade, but she lost her footing from the weight of the enraged strike. The brown-skinned witch, took that opening. The glint of her cunning katana rushed forth like a flash of death. Sunaga's muzzle then found the witch once again, but the brown-skinned beauty smiled boldly from the end of his sights. The witch who was the most skilled with arms had cast a feint at a mere human, fragile human. Despair froze from his spine into a pillar of ice as he sensed his impending death, but Irene leapt to close the distance. The blade that was originally supposed to be swung into Allison turning away like a swallow and attacking Sunaga instead. The sound of sliced flesh and the echo of severed bone, neither were heard. There was only a large crimson spray sprouting where Sunaga's right arm used to be. He couldn't stop his reflexive scream at the violent pain he'd never experienced before. The right arm holding Sunaga's handgun had been eliminated from the elbow down. Not only had her sharp blade severed it, but the brush of her repulsion field had even dissembled his very cells. The red mist left behind in its absence was already melting into the air. That's one arm down. Irene's mutter was colder than the silver glint of her blade. Robbing him of his right arm negated his gun. The only reason she hadn't converted his entire body to ash was because she intended to execute him in order to dissolve the rage boiling within her. She required not only his death, but an offering leading up to it, an offering of his agony. Her deadly blade turned again with those muttered words. Without wasting a second, she swung wide at Allison, who was about to attack her from behind. It was divine strikes, delivered without even looking. Allison's legs were sliced off from the knee down, sending her crashing into a sea of her own blood. She stretched her hand out toward her own severed legs, groaning as she crawled along the floor. Irene no longer even spared her a glance, instead walking toward Tsunaga, who was writhing in agony with his eyes rolled back. She closed her eyes and listened to the agonized groans of her enemy. My disgrace has been cleansed. When she opened her azurite eyes, they had already recovered the tranquility of a calm lake. This means playtime is over. I'll grant you a quick death as my sworn enemy. She placed her palm against the edge of her blade, drawing it to deliver the killing thrust. One could say she was a true warrior, refusing to drown in the strength of her own combat prowess and showing the self-control to only take necessary actions. However, her iron will was suddenly assailed by incomprehensible fear. Her unstable emotions were caused by the man beneath her, Tsunaga. For a man who was already too deeply wounded to fight. From a man who was already too deeply wounded to fight, who was just waiting for his death. The groans emanating from Tsunaga's throat had taken a different tone than agony at some point. His groans brought out a dark, sticky, primitive fear hidden deep with Irene. A fear of the fate she could not escape, no matter how strongly she hung herself, as long as she remained a woman. A fear of being devoured by a man's insatiable, bestial lust. It was just like... Why? Why are you making me remember that? The core to her logic was collapsing. She was imagining herself standing before one of those repulsive, worm-like monsters. Yes, it's only a delusion, Irene told herself, trying to sever that illusion with only denial and own willpower. But in that moment, her nightmare manifested in reality. Something stretched from Tsunaga like a slick, heavy, with a slick, heavy sound from where his right arm was supposed to be. It seized hold of Irene where she stood a good 3 meters away. No way! That thing, covered in secretions, was growing from where Tsunaga's right arm used to be. There was no mistaking it any longer. That thing, wrapped around Irene's ankle, was none other than a thick tentacle reminiscent of a deep sea creature. The tentacle snapped like a whip onto her wrist. Irene was easily lifted up into the air and slammed against the ceiling and floor twice. Her brutal edge went flying from her grip. What are you? Tsunaga's visage was clearly different from before. There were no changes to his external appearance aside from the tentacles growing from his missing right arm. The expression on his face looked like that of a man enduring indescribable pain. It looked like the pain didn't come from his wound, but from something eating him from the inside. He staggered and seized his own face with his remaining left hand. The force was almost enough to crush his own skull. Allison forgot about rejoining her severed limbs, her attention instead fixated on Tsunaga's abnormal transformation. In her eyes, it looked like Tsunaga was struggling and fighting against something. The howl he suddenly unleashed was no longer human. His bloodshot eyes raced around, searching for a target to slam his agony-drenched impulses into when he glared at Irene. Tsunaga began assaulting the brown-skinned witch like he turned into a monstrous wild beast. Well, let go! Irene first reached down to try and pull the repulsive whip-like flesh away from her ankle, but Tsunaga seized that hand, and not with his human five-fingered left hand. No, no way! The tip of the tentacle arm wrapped around her legs split into force. Each of the four offshoots transformed into independent tentacles, stretching over Irene's torso. Although the main body of the tentacle arm was short, it held more than enough strength to restrain Irene's arms. She was left unable to put up any resistance. What are you doing? Even though Irene staunchly refused to think of the fate awaiting her, she couldn't stop herself from asking. The answer came from the feverish glint in Tsunaga's eyes. Hold on just 1 minute, folks. Okay. His still human left hand seized the collar of Irene's clothes and began ripping them off. Her chest was laid bare and her brown skin breast spilled out. Her silky, soft skin had never been exposed to the man of Pandemonium. Her well-balanced and voluptuously sized mounds bounced and jiggled. Still, the emotion dominating Irene was still fear, not shame at her exposure. She caught sight of the huge tentacle rising and stretching from Sunika's lower body as it crawled in between her clothes. It was twice as thick as the tentacles binding her limbs. The tip bore the clear shape of a dick. The only explanation was that Sunika's genitals had transformed and matured into that monster. Foul-smelling secretion was dripping from its tip, which meant the thing it was heading for was... Every hair on Irene's body stood on end as she imagined it. Stop! Don't bring that thing near me! She muttered up all her might and attempted to struggle free. Her body shuddered as she tried to rip away her soft bonds, but her arms barely moved at all. In that instant, the penile tentacle shuddered. Huge load of juices sprayed out from the hole of it on its tip. What is this? Filthy! The hot, raw, filthy fluid slammed into her face, mercilessly soiling her brown-skinned beauty. It's getting in my mouth! Yeah! The slick fluid splattered in Irene's mouth, eyes, and nostrils. Some entered her windpipe, causing her to cough as she struggled to spit it up. My body's... Irene realized she had blundered. She knew secondhand knowledge of this. The maggots possessed a unique secretion that both paralyzes a witch's nerves and activates their erogenous zones, which meant that no matter how repulsive they were, one's body would experience orgasm regardless of one's will. As someone who had so stringently controlled herself, that was the most disgraceful blow imaginable to Irene. So what about this stuff? Even though he hadn't done anything to her yet, her body's erogenous zones were already beginning to ache with heat. The folds hiding beneath the lips of her crotch were already gaining an inexplicable wetness. Tsunaga's left hand ripped away Irene's skin-tight leggings. Her crotch was exposed to the open air, and her wet slit shuddered from the chill. Stop it! Don't touch me! She gritted her teeth hard, trying to endure it. She'd already given up preventing insertion, instead focused on her resistance to what came after. I mean, yeah, this is the tentacle scene coming from Tsunaga. Of course she's saying, stop it. It's a repulsive thing. You're breaking me. She's not happy about it. I think I forgot to... No, I don't want to replay any voice. Okay. Getting off. Of course. Like hot metal tongs. Ouch. Ooh. I don't like this version of Tsunaga. It says Irene was enveloped by signs of her impending death. Although witches were immortal, they weren't unkillable. Her life hung on a fragile spider's thread supported only by the absurd laws of magic. There was no reason a vertebrae like her should be free of the natural order that demands death when the heart was crushed. In truth, the witch died the moment her heart was pierced. Ooh. And of course she was, you know, brought back to life. Okay, even if her heart and brain were crushed simultaneously, so long as that circulation remained healthy, she would immediately recover. We know that. In other words, the true nature of a witch's immortality resided not in their brains or hearts, but the magic power within their blood and circulation of that power. The only way to negate that immortality was to physically sever the circulation of blood and magic power. In other words, severing the neck and the flow of blood between the brain and the heart. Okay, I see. It hurts. Okay, while Irene suffered her visual hallucinations of death, the memory of her death as a human played back in her mind. Oh, wow. She wailed and sobbed with someone else's voice. Not her identity as a witch, it was the voice of a young child. Save me, Toko Oni-chan. Sister, save me, I'm dying. Oh my god, is that the little girl? She felt the agony of the past within a memory, not in her body, but in her soul. The crushing of her heart triggered her instinctual reason to death, summoning forth that lingering aspect of Irene. Irene's mind had reverted to that of the young child who was once brutally raped to death by 5,000 brutes. Is it over? Will you end this for me? Her indigo eyes wandered in search of salvation. Their gaze stopped on the demonic expression of the man continuing to violate her. This man will end me. End us. Her muttered prayer was cut short by the meat skewer puncturing through her esophagus during its advance. The entirety of her esophagus was filled with tentacle. Yeah, Sunaga unleashed himself inside of her throat. Okay. Power. His killing force could puncture through two layers of fresh tatami, making it no different from an iron blade. Thrust it into Irene's windpipe. Oh! After the thick sound of severing flesh, fresh blood sprayed from her neck and onto her head, rolling beneath her. There was actually some important story parts in that, so I read them. Allison had witnessed the entire thing from start to finish. All she could do was watch, unable to move even a single finger. Trapped in terror so strong, it denied her flight. Let's see where we're at. 92, guys. 92! Her paralyzed thoughts rebooted when Sunaga raised himself away from the now-dead Irene. Allison's instincts as a witch screamed danger. I'm next to be violated and murdered. Her frozen body suddenly moved rapidly. Allison sprung up, turned her back on Sunaga, fled like a rabbit. Sunaga silently watched her receding back. The brutally violated corpse of Irene lay at his feet. He had raped and murdered that witch with his own hands. It was hard for him to believe it was his own doing now that his mind had restabilized, though. Regardless, it was irrefutably the remains of brutality dealt by Sunaga himself. The impulse spawned from that tremendous pain had turned his mind red, and he assaulted her to release it. His fusion with the maggot had progressed to both body and mind. Within his body dwelt the same repulsive, vile tendrils Brian commanded, as well as their regenerative capabilities. Once the tentacles that assaulted Irene were done replacing his right arm, they returned to a human shape. He instinctually understood that he would now be able to will it to resume tentacle form. However, those physical changes to her body weren't what he needed to fear. It's a matter of how long I can hold out, huh? Just like Sunaga muttered, the problem was not how long he could retain his identity as Sunaga Shogo. Right now, he's being supported by the maggot cell's regenerative abilities and life force. Those cells must have expanded in proportion to the wounds they healed in the course of his battle with Irene. Naturally, that would mean that the maggot had gained that much more dominion over his mind. If his very identity was overtaken by the maggot, he'd lose all freedom and become a beast driven solely by lust. He needed to accomplish his objective before that happened. He thought of those pomegranate glows, the mysterious color of those eyes that were always focusing on him every time he noticed them. Thinking about it, that was strange. He thought he had made his sole goal in life to bury the leader of his enemy, Shimon, the man who revealed himself before him. Yet before he knew it, he was acting toward a different objective. Of course, he still had no intention of letting Shimon live. For now, Sunaga still retained enough of himself to let out a derisive laugh at that queer chain of events. Once more, Sunaga took another step forward, driving himself toward his eventual destructive conclusion. Slumville, 50th and top floor. There were hardly ever instances of a human other than Shimon visiting that spacious floor that had all its dividing walls removed. Even amongst the witch hunters directly under his command, only Brian McComhale, captain and leader of his ground team of ruffians, as well as Sandy and Isabel, the witches hunting their own kind, came here. No one else. Of those three, Brian had yet to return, and Sandy was put in charge of managing the captured witches in his stead. That left only Isabel, but that wild volatile witch would never work with the same lust as her partners possessed. She dealt with everything according to her whims. She would never volunteer for a job like Sandy, so she was probably flying about like a stray cat milking some men dry. However, that Isabel had just returned to Shimon. Hey now, what happened to you? Shimon used his foot to stop the rolling head of Isabel. I take my eyes off you for a while and you come back just ahead. You're useless to me like this now. Shimon heaved a weary sigh and turned his gaze toward the entrance to the floor. Towering there was a black man with a commanding face and powerful physique over 2 meters tall. The entirety of his huge frame was covered by a dark suit, giving the impression of a vicious beast collared to something. This unfamiliar visitor was the one who wrenched off the head of the witch, Isabel. I thought I heard some minor commotion down below, but I suppose that was your doing too. Shimon cocked his head and gave the visitor an appraising glance. They have even taken of the accursed things. They have stolen, they have lied, and they have put them among their own things. The Inquisitor Valentino spoke proudly with his deep voice under that gaze. Realizing the meaning he placed behind that holy verse, Shimon's lips drew into an understanding sneer. I see, so you're after the Gospel of Judas. Even the vile book of that accursed heretic is another part of our great doctrine. It is a holy relic of darkness that our Almighty God allows to exist according to His will. Such a dark part of our doctrine must not be left outside our reach. I'm returning it to the Vatican. God's beast solemnly proclaimed his mission, but Shimon just spat out a scoff before His Majesty. Heh, Almighty God, my ass. If your God had been doing his job right, you know who would have never gotten any strange ideas. However, his twisted sneer was soon directed at himself. It was a bitter, somewhat sad smile. Nah. If that were the case, that woman never would have taken me in either. I guess I owe your God some thanks for neglecting this shithole of a world. The hardened Inquisitor didn't even give his queer statement consideration. He lowered his huge clenched fist while chanting a verse and advancing to fulfill his sole absolute duty. Though our God forgives all of creation, we as disciples have no shred of mercy nor hesitation when inflicting violence. In a sense, there was even more wickedness brimming in Valentino's expression than Shimon's. Though violence is a foolish sin, our God forgives our sins and foolishness. How could He not forgive us when we wield that violence for His doctrine? Oh, violence sanctioned by God. What a sweet nectar. I will never surrender this right, this joy, to any other. And the huge man, smiling, bared, white teeth, Shimon saw the darkness of the world that had spanned over 2 millennia. Within him lay the hypocrisy of mankind who murdered a saint upon the cross and lifted him up to godhood to create an absolute creed that took in all contradictions. Along with that, he saw their history of barbarism doled out in the name of his unshakable righteousness. That's such a self-centered, shitty excuse, but you sure are honest with yourself, hehe. I like people like you. Shimon met Valentino's arrogant declaration with an affectionate smile. The original word for desire means that which is longed for. In short, the same word describes anything our hearts want that we currently don't have, which is ultimately anything and everything. Anyone who tries to use a different expression or tries to claim they're acting for someone or something else can't be trusted. Doesn't matter if they call it ambition, ideals, or duty. What were the true intentions of the words quickly spilling from his mouth? That's all brought about by guilt. Those people aren't ready to embrace the filthiness of the word desire. They can change the word all they want, but desire is still there. They're all dicks just going around covering their damn naughty bits with fig leaves and trying to make their own actions seem pretty. Valentino's never halted his resolute advance. Shimon's long banter continued even as he moved forward. However, you and that young one, the man named Tsunaga, have laid it all bare. You haven't got a single intention of hiding your dark motive, shame, or reputation behind some leaf. People like you two are the ones that can be trusted regardless of whether you're ally or foe. Shimon still hadn't moved. His emotions were unreadable from his expression, but he maintained his composure as if he was braced for something. Which is why I've decided to lay it all bare too, even if... The latter half of that line, even if it means betraying her, melted in his mouth. Was that hesitation a result of this middle-aged man's last fragment of purity? However, the truth would never become any clearer. At that moment, Valentino's had closed in and swung his huge fist like a battering ram. Evil priest, shatter now before this violence I offer unto God. Oh, hallelujah! Then, with the destructive power of a dreadnought manifested in his clenched fist from reciting a holy verse, he struck Shimon with the mighty fist of God. The power to overwrite the rules of the world slammed into Shimon Though Shimon had swallowed the relic, every cell in his body was scorched and reduced to ash by the flames of revelations made manifest in this physical world. All that was left behind of him was a mound of scattered papyrus. The Vatican's confidential and antithetical relic had left Shimon's body and returned once more to paper. You didn't even bother resisting? The Inquisitor narrowed his brow in doubt while his skin still tangled. Tingled with the excitement of violently exterminating an enemy of God. That death was far too peaceful for an evil leader willing to conduct black arts on such a large scale. Incomprehensible, but very well. I've retrieved the gospel. He supposed that in the end, the man was just another villain bringing his whims with him into his death. Valentino ceased trying to understand that man's reasoning and gathered up all of the pages. The witch Sandy sensed the quiet change. It wasn't something she could see with her eyes, and her consciousness hadn't yet recognized it. However, the amalgamation of non-visual information she perceived was warning her subconscious that something was going down. As Sandy ruminated on that premonition, two women came to her mind. Both were fellow witch hunters and witches, Irene and Isabel. Both of them, huh? She hadn't seen either of them for over half a day. Someone had stormed in downstairs during the early dawn, but she figured that commotion would be settled between the humans, so she wasn't interested. However, Isabel's curiosity had been piqued, so she had jaunted down for fun. However, she hadn't returned to Sandy since then. The other one, Irene, had clearly lost any desire for their work. She didn't even bother to hide that attitude of hers after Gloria ended up like that. Apparently that brown-skinned witch had harbored some special feelings towards Gloria, whether that was respect and competitiveness toward a rival, or a subconscious homosexual desire, well... drowning her damn self in useless feelings. It all goes away once you die anyway. There's even a faint tinge of compassion mixed with the contempt of the contempt in the insult she spat out. She's no use to us anymore either. We should knock her up soon, crush her, and then roll out the next one. Sandy coldly evaluated the merit left in the current Irene. Her attitude was similar to that of a brothel matron or a head slave, deciding the fate of her comrades while being in the same position as them. In all honesty, Sandy truly was in such a position. She was the sole witch with continuous memories of all 7 years that passed since the birth of Pandemonium. Sandy had watched over the fate that awaited all of her comrades without ever birthing another copy of herself or changing out for the next generation like all of her other comrades. Only this brawny tattooed woman had managed to escape the cycle of suffering meant for the witches. She had simply never lost a single fight, Jamon, the priest in charge of running things, had silently acknowledged her freedom. She'd also decided to pursue this path due to a specific encounter, though. Pardon. An encounter with the extra nameless witch, Jane Doe had told her to do so. She told her to seize the fates of the other 25 witches in her hand and abuse them all. She told her that by taking on that role, she alone would be excused from that cycle of abuse. Oddly enough, that girl's words had aligned with Sandy's own inner voice, so she accepted. She never understood who that young girl was, but that was a trifling question in her life. Sandy would continue to keep hunting down her sister witches. Even she could tell that they were all bound together by some strong bond. Still, she chose to kill and offer up the souls of her sisters. Their souls would then enter their new vessels and reunite before being sent to hell again. Someday after keeping up that bloody cycle, she dreamed. Dreamed that one day her efforts would be rewarded. That was the moment when Sandy first seized control of her own life. Soon she wouldn't even need Shimon. That man was incredibly hard to go against. Though, the moment she thought that, the darkness before her gave birth to an even darker shadow. Oh, well, well. If this isn't a rare place to meet, it's been a while, hasn't it? Sandy's dark lips curled up sadistically. The tall figure of Tsunaga Shogo appeared before her, the beloved Romeo that Witch Carol depended upon. Events were suddenly moving in Sandy's favor. I'm taking Carol back. Tsunaga also acknowledged the presence of that comrade-hunting witch. He made his statement with soft words, his breath ragged as he gritted his teeth. Yeah, sure thing. Sandy broke her stance and laughed. When she captured Tsunaga, he'd be the best tool ever for tormenting Carol. I'll take you right to her, as a human mutt with severed limbs, just like I said before. The huge, powerful woman arrogantly stepped forward. She had no intention of killing Tsunaga. She was only going to render him quiet while keeping him alive. Then... her vision flashed and flickered as a shock suddenly hit her chin from the front. She couldn't grasp what had happened at all. Delayed pain raced through her. Her jaw was cracked. However, the truth only took a mere glance to understand. The sight of Tsunaga in his stance with a clenched fist couldn't be clearer. You just flat out punched me? She processed the situation with shock. Just now, she had been punched in the face by an ordinary fist thrown by a normal human. That was impossible. The physical body of a witch who hasn't been weakened by blood loss was as hard as a cliff. Anyone who'd hit with that amount of force was just going to break their own fist. Not only that, but a repulsion field currently deployed, even a blast from an anti-material rifle couldn't damage her. Why you? The anger she felt at the pain and shame overrode her ability to consider that mystery further. She attacked him again, this time using all her might, refusing to let him near. She fainted for his face while suddenly slashing at his abdomen. The speed was impossible for a human's dynamic vision to capture, but Sunika reacted to it with ease. His left log-sized leg bounced up and smashed into the right elbow of the arm-swinging Sandy's sword. The joint broke under the snap of his well-honed iron legs. She unexpectedly took damage from from that unpredictable counter. However, the powerful woman had survived 7 years of battle, so she endured the pain and swung her remaining left blade. This blow was aimed at Sunika's right arm. That's spelled wrong. Even if he managed to react, her slash was delivered at the perfect moment to leave it unavoidable. Despite that, Sunika never moved to dodge or defend. He just stretched out his right arm and seized hold of Sandy's left hand along with her blade. This time, Sandy's whole body froze in shock. She had caught sight of the slimy, wet tendrils of flesh crawling over her hand. Her instincts as a witch flared up, causing her to unleash screams of disgust and fear. They were truly maggot tentacles, therefore Sunika's right arm had to have transformed into those. The strength of his muscles and his amplified reactions of his nerves had been exceeding those of a human. She had guessed that there was some abnormality to Sunika's physique from just that, but this was completely unexpected. Sandy had no way of knowing. She couldn't know that Sunika's body was in the process of fusing with those immortal maggots, those beasts that shared the same origin as witches on a cellular level. In addition, more fleshy tendrils continued to crawl out from the sleeves and cuffs of his clothes. There were nearly 10 wrapping around Sandy's entire body. She was too confused to make the call to get away. No way, this can't be. Her instincts ran wild and her reasoning broke down. Sandy's world collapsed. Her own ego was overwhelmed in the process, leaving the core she'd hidden from everyone, her inner woman, laid bare. Her hair stood on end from that creepy snake-like breath. What? Okay. While she tasted fear for the very first time, a bizarre glint in his eye filled her vision. Within that glint lay a single starving beast, a beast whose mind was overwritten by bare lust and needed to violate the prey before him. Wow, that's Sunika. Holy shit. What a scene. Sandy's body boasted great strength, but the complete ensnarement had left her pinned in place. Tentacles dug tightly into all of her limbs and her thick neck. Since she couldn't turn her head, she couldn't see Sunika behind her. The fear of the unseen was shaving away even further in Sandy's mind. And she looks like a female saber tooth. Even has like the teeth. Stop it! What the fuck are you doing? They squeezed so tight that they might crush her muscles. Even as she groaned from that, Sandy screamed to get away from the even more terrifying fate awaiting her. Fight me fair and square. I'll never lose in a fight. Sandy roared, but insistent wriggles along her crotch gave her goosebumps. Stop this, you fucker. I'll kill you. I'll fucking kill you. There were screams intermingled between her threatening shouts. Then, as if mocking Sandy, with a wet plunge, a huge tentacle forced open her pussy. Oh, shit. Sandy shuddered with disgrace and hatred. She gritted her teeth as the fleshy tendril pushed further in and left her blushing even redder. Oh, wow, okay. This thing wouldn't... Uh-huh. Uh-oh. Don't touch my nipples, I'm weak there. Uh-oh. Sandy's strength drained from her body as they focused on her sensitive breasts. Her mind grew hazy with a pink fog, and she was having trouble thinking about anything anymore. Uh-oh. Her tongue had changed color. Uh-oh, she's really... Alright. He's suffocating her now. Yep. Her muscles loosened up and drooped as her amber eyes glowed with ecstasy. Her face grew slack. Yeah, look at her. She was a powerful woman all witches feared as a witch hunter, but not a shred of that remained in her face. Self-awareness of trying to hide her shameful state was blown from Sandy's mind. Even the pressure squeezing around her neck and limbs began changing into pleasure. The hell? I'm coming from my ass? Oh, man, she's... Yeah. Her body's melting. Wow! An otherworldly scream rushed from Sandy's throat. Her final expression was cruel and terrifying, a fitting visage for death. Yep. Instead, her body tasted the agony of being torn limb from limb, along with her neck. Greatest possible agony and suffering assailed Sandy's body, refusing to let her die in peace. Then she dies. Wow. At the same time, her innards began popping like broken water balloons, and Sandy burst. The vile tendrils had finally ripped the fierce tattooed woman's limbs from her body. Her severed neck, arms, and legs each sailed through the air like separate creatures. It was like watching a child cruelly dismember a doll. Once they had all been tossed aside like worthless trash, the witch hunter Sandy's death was at an end. Not enough. A groan leaked from the throat of the man standing amidst the appalling smell of blood. His speech was awkward and stilted, as if some creature with a different mouth structure was trying to speak human words. In fact, his vocal cords and palate had already transformed into something inhuman. Fucking killing more. The crimson glow behind his eyes was insane. All that swirled there was a terrifying degree of lust and brutality. It was the vestiges of 5,000 human scumbags, the souls imprinted within maggots. Even after being reduced to a mere cell, they retained their unending obsession with the brutish cycle of raping and destroying women. They violated, defiled, and destroyed the corpse of Sandy the Witch, as their raging instincts demanded. Even as they looked down upon her, that impulse still was insated. He picked up one of Sandy's severed legs as if enchanted with the red, ruptured, juicy flesh of it. Then he took that flesh-soaked and still fresh blood with an expression of joy, dug his teeth into it. He just barely managed to snap it back to himself before then. He stared at Sandy's soft-looking thigh held before him, realizing just what he was about to do. He cast the flesh away from his hands with a scream. Without even realizing it, he's nearly fallen off a cliff on the path to becoming a beast. There was no ethical meaning to that act, and he felt fear at his own complete lack of awareness of it. His identity clearly eroded further than it was after fighting that brown-skinned witch. His mind and body were definitely undergoing an irreversible transformation. He's barely holding on to the remnants of his reason now. He was still able to maintain human shape, but the fate that awaited him in the not-so-distant future was clear. Please make it in time. He gritted his teeth hard enough for them to break. The pain running through his gums wasn't enough to serve as a crucial link to keep himself human. Hold on a minute. No, he remembered he didn't care if he ceased to be human, so long as he managed to fulfill the promise he swore. The moment he focused on that, he couldn't remember what his objective was anymore. For that matter, what was his name? My memories are being eaten. While standing dumbfounded, a long gray tongue covered with slime spilled from his mouth. There were clearly more teeth in his mouth than a human possessed. His jaw unhinged and his mouth split open all the way to his ears. Desperately tried to close his mouth, mustering up his willpower to suppress the transformation. The more he let his guard down, the more his body would take on a shape befitting the souls within. That of a maggot. Those wormy monsters. He began to fear that he would soon forget how to walk upright. However, one memory still remained with him. It was calling out from deep within. Everything pushing his legs forward was driving him to meet that figure once more. Powerful will held his grating, violent body together. The man who lost his own name set out once more, drawn by the lingering image of a girl. Did I run away again? Oh, man. Yeah, if he kills Allison, like, that's gonna suck. But it's already the hour, and we are done for now. I might go ahead and do some more tomorrow. If I get a brief moment of silence where I can do it before we do the show. So I might do some more tomorrow just to see how much we can get done. And hopefully we'll get, you know, at least close to done or finished by tomorrow. But at any rate, this is the Grimlord, and I'm out for Grim Sentai Corner with Maggot Bates.